Blog Talk Radio.
You ready to rock this town by now?
Welcome to weekly episode number 34 of Rock This Town Radio with TC. I am your host, TC Clark, and along with my production assistant, as always, Cuddles the Cat, we're coming to you from our Bloomfield studio in the 412. That's Pittsburgh, PA. Happy November, everybody. And no, it's not fucking Christmas yet. Okay, tonight we welcome... I know, you're a Christmas guy. Hey, we welcome back Carl tonight as a co-host for a show that we've both been looking forward to for having for a long time. It's Stacks versus Chess night, as we visit some of the great music by those two influential labels that help shape rock and roll. I'll be presenting eight great songs from Chess, and Carl will match it with eight tracks from Stax. Welcome back, my friend, to the show that never ends. Carl?
Well, I'm so glad to be here today. This is going to be fun, and I'm with you. You know, we have this Stax versus Chess, but we're both big fans of both labels, and I think our listeners are going to have a real, real wonderful earworms to listen to for the next millennia, because these are great songs.
Yeah, but we gotta point out one thing about this, Carl, don't we? Because people think Chess and Stax, they think of great people like from Stax, Otis Redding, from Chess, Bo Diddley. Tell them why they won't be hearing those tonight, Carl.
Well, basically, because of the payola schemes of the 50s and early 60s, any major label, you know, didn't want the eyeballs on if they were pushing all their songs on one label. So they would do subsidiary labels. For Chess, it was Checker was the subsidiary. For Stax, it was Volt. Now, Stax actually started the satellite, and I'll get into that during the first set, but within a year it became Stax, and I'll explain why. So that's why. So we are only doing Chess label and Stax labels. So you're not going to hear Otis Redding tonight. You're not going to hear Coco Taylor tonight. Okay, so just so you guys know that.
And it was tough for us, too. I don't know. I can't speak for you, but for me, I'm thinking, all right, let's put this guy on there or Coco Taylor on there. And then I looked, and it's like, son of a bitch, because we are strict about our rules on this, whereas Stax
right.
and Chess only. But we're talking about a later show where we'll get into those subsidiaries. But, Carl, we have a lot to cover tonight, so let's get at it. I'm starting with the very first recording released on a Stax label in the form of a...
No, on the Chess label.
On the Chess label. Ah, see, I'm already screwed up. I wanted those Stax. But it was the first one ever released on a Chess label, and it was on a 10-inch 78. And this is Gene Ammons and his sextet.
Thank you.
women have heard of jalopies, you've heard the noise they make, but let me introduce my new Rocket 88. Yes, it's straight, just one way. Everybody likes my Rocket 88. Baby, we'll ride in style, moving all along. Smart and designed, black convertible top, and the gals don't mind. Going with me, riding all around town for joy. Blow your horn, baby, blow. In my rocket and don't be late, baby, we are pulling out about half past eight. Going round the corner and it'll feel everybody in my car's gonna take a little nip. Move on out, oozing and cruising along.
Was Rocket 88 by Jackie Branston and his Delta Cats, recorded in 1951, and the first Chess record to make it to number one in the R&B charts. We'll come back to that in a minute, Carl, because I know we'll want to talk about that a lot. I started my part of the show with My Foolish Heart by saxophone great Gene Ammons and his sextet. This was released on 10-inch vinyl, 78 speed, in June of 1950, and like I said, the first release ever by Chess Records. Carl, did you know Gene Ammons was the son of Boogie Woogie pianist Albert Ammons?
Absolutely, I knew that. Absolutely. And of course, we featured Albert on the Boogie Woogie and Jump Blues show that we did a couple weeks ago.
We certainly did. It's interesting, but let's, you know, that's a great tune and everything, but I think we need to talk about Rocket 88 a lot. Okay. We talked about how it was actually, you and I talked about how it was actually Ike Turner's band backing him, and how Ike basically discovered Jackie. And this is the first of a couple of Memphis connections with Chess Records that I'll hit on tonight. Actually, Sam Phillips of Sun Records recorded that, and that song was recorded in Memphis, but it was licensed to Chess Records for distribution.
Right, and that was an arrangement that only lasted, I think, a year or two. And then Sun, when they got some of their other artists, they decided not to license and push distribution themselves. I'm pretty sure that's the case. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Sun Records, of course, you know, I mean, that label preceded everything we're doing today, and they brought along some of the greatest out of Memphis. And so was Stax. No, Sun was gone by the time Stax came out, weren't they?
Yeah, basically at that point, and well, actually not before Satellite. Satellite was 1957.
Okay.
Okay, and I'll get into that momentarily. But once Stax hit in 60 or 61, I think it is, yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah. I think they were bought out by GNR at that point.
But it was interesting that, you know, how we talked about the Ike Turner connection. And he really had connections with both, with all three labels, actually.
Yeah.
And but Jackie Branson, he really didn't do anything after Rocket 88. And that song was like, that opened the door for a lot right there. And
There's a reason for that, because there was an argument in terms of Ike Turner's, you know, Rhythm Aces featuring Jackie Branson.
Right.
And no, the label wanted Jackie Branson featuring the Rhythm Aces without Ike's name mentioned.
That's correct. That's why they called it the Delta Cats.
And he was very unhappy about that. And so, you know how we talk about, like, sort of blacklisting?
Yep.
Ike never worked with Branson again and fought against him getting any other labels. We all know what kind of person Ike Turner was. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, yeah. And you can imagine if he was in a pissing match about top billing and all that, you know how that's going to end up.
Yeah.
So I started the show with Chess Records, two right off the bat, and let's see what you got for me or for us.
Okay, I could certainly do that. Now, a couple weeks ago in mid October, I went down to visit my co-host, Rachel. And they live in Memphis. She just got married to Jeremy and had a wonderful time. But I had two things that I insisted on. And one of them was going to the Stax Records Museum. And it was important to me. When I was growing up in the 60s, my sister, who was 3 years older than I was a huge, huge Motown fan. But I gravitated to this sound, which we're going to hear tonight, which is a much more rough and ready type of sound. It's not, I really, this was my intro to black music was through Stax. And we're going to focus on a number of the people there. But I do want to give a little bit of information. I mentioned Satellite Records. Stax was founded in 1957, and it was changed to Stax Records in 61. It also shared operations with its sister label, Bolt. But it was basically founded by two business partners, Jim Stewart and Estelle Axton. And if you think about it, ST for Stewart, AX for Axton, Stax. And it was and I got to tell you that it's based in Memphis. And, you know, Memphis and in the South, and we're talking about all the social upheaval and that. This was an integrated label from the get-go. Okay, so their house bands were all integrated. And the two songs we're going to do right now are from their house bands. Now, the first one is from 1960, and it's the Marquise, and this is Last Night. So let's listen to this, and I'm going to tell you, you've heard this song before, trust me. We'll be right back. personally, you can't get a better set of two instrumentals in my mind at all. What do you think?
And the funny thing about it is they're basically the same guys.
Sort of, not all the way,
but there were two of them.
Sort of, kind of. And I'm going to get into that. So the Marquise, do you realize that Steve Cropper is on that record, okay? But he ain't playing guitar.
No, he isn't.
He's playing backup organ.
Yeah. Yeah, he's playing because the producer did not want a guitar in that
particular
song.
One. Yeah. But then again, you hear Steve, of course, in Green Onions. Dunn then joins the Marquise in 62, I think, or maybe early 63.
Yeah.
And so you've got two of the guys that then go on to have varied careers and, of course, Blues Brothers and all that type of stuff, right? I mean, they recorded everywhere.
Okay,
go ahead.
Well, you didn't say what your songs were.
Okay.
It was
so,
Last
so
Night by
the
Marquise.
Right, and then, of course, Green Onions by Booker T.
And the MGs.
They were both top 10 sellers on the R&B charts. They both became gold records. And what basically happened with the Marquise and with Booker T comes in like 1962 and auditions, and like they say, oh, God, let's hook him up with these people. And so these whole two groups were not exactly interchangeable, but band members went from to and forth when they were doing things, and they were the two backing bands.
They were the studio musicians for Stax.
Yeah. And so it was a combination of two. The Marquise eventually faded out, and it became Booker T as the main backup, for Stax. And, you know, we talk about, you know, the Motown studio players. We talk about the Chess studio players. You know, I mean, you know, it's an amazing amount of musicianship in all these labels, no question.
Well, that's another point that not only on Stax, but on Chess, a lot of these songs we're going to hear tonight have the same musicians as backing, you know, and that's where they had the studio bands. Now, I didn't really look into it, but the Marquise and Booker T and the MGs, did they overlap? Because I know the Marquise disbanded in 66, I believe.
Oh, yeah. They were two separate groups that were both connected with Stax and Volt. The Marquise did a little more backing on Volt than Booker. Booker was more Chess, and he did some Volt too, but it was like Booker T were the number one backing crew, but if they needed the number two backing crew, that would be the Marquise. And they, like, switched personnel all the fucking time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting when you look at, you know, you look up a song and you see who is on the song. It's like, well, holy shit, he was on this one, and he was in this one, and this one, and this one. And I know I'm going to have a couple artists coming up that were, shit, they're probably on every Chess, you know, or a lot of the Chess and Checker offerings. But anything else on your move?
No. That's what we got so far. So why don't you go ahead with your next set?
All right. My next offerings are two of the biggest early commercial successes for Chess Records. And we're starting with The Moon Glows.
Sincerely, cotton wouldn't do no more. Gun got cloud and started to rain. I tooted my horn for the passing lane. A rainwater blowing all under my hood. I knew that was doing my motor good. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started back doing the things you used to do.
Classic Maybelline. Carl, Rolling Stone once wrote of that song, "Rock and Roll Guitar Starts Here." And yeah. Hey, that's my second car song of the night.
No, seriously. Seriously. There's no question about that. Chuck Berry is the star of rock and roll guitar.
Yep.
No question. I mean, there were other people in that era. But no one came close to not only the popularity, the influence of Chuck Berry.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, they called him the father of rock and roll, and he really refined and developed rhythm and blues into that rock sound.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's come back to him. But I started with the Moonglows and Sincerely, which is her first big success at Checks Records. That was 1954. And the song was co-written by Cleveland DJ Alan Freed. And it's interesting because Freed often insisted on co-writing credits to songs that he promoted, but he was actually involved in writing Sincerely. But one of the original doo-wop groups. And they really brought doo-wop into the forefront of radio and American rock and roll.
You know, doo-wop is a very American event in music history. And there are so many different styles of doo-wop. I tend to go for the black doo-wop. But there were many, many white doo-wop groups also, the Ad-Libs and so many.
Sure.
But that smoothness and it's just an incredible thing to listen to. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. The smoothness of it and just the musicality. And how can you not swoon to that music? Seriously. And when it's done well, and the Moonglows did it well all the friggin' time. Yeah, good stuff.
I love how the harmonies. You know, they had the baritone, the bass, the sopranos, and how they worked it in. Moonglows, the Orioles. I mean, the Moonglows opened the door for a lot of those bands, you know, like the Orioles and the white ones like you're talking, you know, and it wasn't, doo-wop wasn't, you know, restricted to that slow, smooth feel. I mean, when you think of it, like the song At the Hop, that was doo-wop, you know, anything that had that kind of backing vocals that, you know, I guess it would be like a three-part, four-part harmony to the back of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the Moonglows were really a pioneer of that.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is let's not forget that doo-wop basically is the basis for any male Motown group of the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, and Frankie Valli and all of that comes out of doo-wop. Doo-wop, major influence on popular music, without a doubt.
And there you have it. Anything else you want to say about Chuck Berry?
The only thing I would say about Chuck Berry, other than like he is a god, is that if anyone gets a chance to see Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, which was the documentary on Berry that was done in the mid-70s, you need to see that.
I have seen that, and it's incredible.
You have to. Chuck Berry didn't take shit from nobody.
No.
Including the Rolling Stones and Mick Jagger.
Yep.
You know, I love Chuck Berry. And let's face it, he gave us one of the greatest novelty numbers of all time, My Ding Wing.
And that's funny because he had faded into obscurity, basically. I mean, he was doing like nostalgia shows until he came out with that song. And if you think about it, what was that, 20 years after Mabel Lane?
It was in the mid-70s. I think that came out.
I think it was too. So, you know, and it got him back into, it was a goofy song, but it got him back into the limelight, you know, and it made a new generation really look into who the hell Chuck Berry was. And, you know, they might not have known who he was and heard My Ding-a-Lang. It's like, who's this fucking guy? And then you go back and hear Mabel Lane and go, God damn. That's
exactly
who that guy is, you know.
Yeah.
So it was a boost. And remember, before then, he was kind of blackballed. I mean, he did some dirty shit, you know, and people were looking down on him. He was having a hard time getting gigs again. And that just brought him back to the forefront. So,
yeah.
Okay.
And, of course, that basically got him the movie I talked about, Hail, Hail,
yeah.
Rock and Roll.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right.
So I was at a conundrum here because I needed to have two people on here. And luckily they're father and daughter. So I could just like put them together when they're singing together. And that would be Rufus and Carla Thomas. Now, Rufus Thomas was, you know, he was a rhythm and blues, funk, soul, blues singer throughout his career. He died in the early 2000s. And he was established as a major star at Stax with songs like Walking the Dog, Do the Funky Chicken, Do the Dog, Push and Pull. But he also, previous to that, recorded for Chess and for Sun Records. So there's another connection.
Yeah.
From Memphis. You know, Memphis to Chess. But one of the things I really want to talk about is he was a disc jockey. And he was a disc jockey on the first station in the United States owned by blacks. And that's WDIA in Memphis.
Hmm.
And as I was going through the Stax Museum, it became really important in working with Stax to promote the Stax label. And Rufus had a lot to do with that. So Rufus in many ways was also contributing to the business acumen of Stax, even though, you know, because he was at WDIA and he promoted the hell out of Stax. So, you know, there's a lot there. His daughter is an incredible singer on her own. Probably her best known single is Baby, B-A-B-Y. But what you're going to hear today is you're going to hear a song, basically Right Time is the Night Time, which was actually, you know, we were talking about this earlier, was traced back to 37 and Roosevelt Sykes. Nappy Brown did his version, and the most famous version is the Ray Charles version in 1957. Now, both these next two songs, and I'll get into the second song later, are covers of songs that you already know, but I think are better. Okay? So we're going to start with Rufus and Carla Thomas, and The Nighttime Is the Right Time. So get us going here, TC.
All right, man, here you go.
About come to an end. About to end. Getting myself back together is gonna be a big problem, I know. But when the right man say he wants me, you can bet I won't say. It's about to end. You're good man. You're good man, baby. You're good man. You're good man. It's about to come to me. Yeah.
So we just listened to Mabel John. Now, those of you that have heard a couple of the shows either with Rachel or with TC know how much I love Mabel John. She was the first female artist to be signed with Motown under Tamla Records. She never got her shrift. It's unfortunate. She never got the acknowledgement of her talent.
She got kind of pigeonholed into being a backup singer, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, you
and
know,
of course,
that's
she did a lot of backup with Ray Charles.
Sure.
She did a
she
ton
was one
of
the
Rayettes,
yeah. Yep.
You know, one thing is if you want to see her at the end of her career, there's a wonderful movie by John Sayles, and the name escapes me right now, but she's Honey Dripper. It's the Honey Dripper, and
uh-huh.
She's featured in it as an old blues singer. But she's phenomenal. Now, the one thing I do want to say is that's the original version of that song. Most people know the Etta James version of that. No,
right.
That's the original. And guess who wrote it?
Go ahead.
Hayes and David Porter. I think Hayes and David Porter were the songwriting crew of Stax. And oh my God, the stuff they wrote. Holy shit. Seriously. That song was written by Isaac Hayes and David Porter. And that's the original. Now, both of these songs are you know, remakes or are better known by other artists. What do you think of these two songs, TC?
Well,
they hold up to other versions?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I had no question at all. And I'm 100% in agreement with you about Mabel John. In fact, it's interesting because when she was signed by Motown, like 1960, and they had ideas of making her a big star. In fact, they put a couple songs out that just didn't do anything. In fact, I think the Marvelettes were her backup singers on one of them.
Yes.
If I remember mm-hmm. correctly. You know, and she, you know, she had all these great people backing them up, and I don't know what happened. Why didn't, and you know, probably at that time too, and we've talked about this with, I can't think of who else, but how Motown, how Berry Gordy would just hitch his wagon to one and just kind of forget about everybody else. And that was right about the time when the Supremes were getting big, you know, and, you know, he put a lot of effort. Oh, Mary Wells.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mary Wells was kind of pushed off to the side while, you know, Berry Gordy was putting all his energy into other acts like the Supremes and, Diana Ross, and I think the same thing happened. So she left there and went to Stax, which was kind of unusual that a Motown artist would go to Memphis. But yeah, she
well,
could have been.
Well, you know, she got the they really wanted to push her, and they did like about 10 or 12 sides with her.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, nothing hit. And we featured a song a while back called Abel Mabel, which I just love.
Yeah.
You know, she's just phenomenal. And that's the original. And I go, again, I you know, we know Etta James does this. But if you listen to these two songs here, you'll notice that there's a tougher edge to them.
Yeah, there is.
There's a much tougher edge.
Right.
Which I really appreciate. And
sure.
The right time
so,
is the
so
right
do
time.
I
you know, Ray Charles, wonderful, but I like that version better, much better.
Well, they had Rufus and Carl had the first hit technically for Stax when it was a Satellite.
Right.
And of course she top with Otis Redding, duets with Otis Redding, but that would have been on the Volt label. But
right.
Yeah, they're both Carla Thomas. What a voice.
Oh,
getting back to
Mabel John,
there's no reason why she was never as big as Aretha Franklin or Etta James or any of them, because she was a powerhouse for sure.
Yeah.
You know, bad management. I don't know.
Oh,
bad
just
management,
bad luck.
Bad exposure, bad luck. You know, you sign out with Motown and here come the Supremes, you know?
Yeah.
Like, well, we're going to push all our
you
money
into
them.
You sign on with Stax, a powerhouse, and you get no hits.
Yeah.
Not for not trying.
That's how it works in this business, my friend. And too bad we've seen so many people go that way. But, okay, I'm going to move on to mine. My next two songs were actually solo efforts by backup singers and musicians at Chess Records. And the first is by the backbone of Chess. And you and I can both agree, Chess wouldn't have been Chess without Willie Dixon.
Oh, fuck, no.
No. He wrote so much for them. He played on so many songs. I mean, I if I really wanted to look through the eight songs I'm playing tonight, I bet he was on five of them at least. You know, or wrote five of them even. I mean, he wrote so many songs for so many of their great artists. And the song I'm actually going to play, I'll kind of introduce it right now, is Little Red Rooster. Now, this was recorded. He didn't record this till 1970. Now, this song was first came out in public by Howlin' Wolf in 1961, I believe. I got it here. Yeah, 1961. So 9 years later, he finally got around to recording his own song. And this is a classic. Little Red Rooster has been covered by everybody, including Tom Petty, Eric Clapton. But here we go with him finally singing his own song like 10 years later.
Red Rooster's on a prowl. Somebody please drive him home. Now if you see my little red rooster, somebody please run him home. In the barnyard since my little red rooster's been
Okay, that was Mitty Collier with I'm Your Part-Time Love from 1963. And it was, we talked about this many times, Carl. It was an answer song to Little Johnny Taylor's Part-Time Love. Mitty Collier was with Chess from 61 to 68. She was actually discovered at a Chicago talent show in 1959. And part of her first place prize was sharing a bill with B.B. King and Etta James, but she had a blast voice that it's incredible. She actually went into gospel and stuff, and she's still alive, and she's actually a minister now, or a pastor, or whatever you want to call her. Did you, were you familiar with much of her work?
No, not at all, and good Lord, does she have a voice.
Oh,
and
yeah.
that could have easily been recorded for Stax. Easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's a little rougher. You know,
right.
there's that real drive to that song.
Well, it drives me nuts. Yeah, I would love to. And I looked and looked and looked and tried to find out who the hell was playing lead guitar on that song. And I couldn't find any information on it. So 1963, it was somebody from the house band. It could have been Buddy Guy. You know, and that's
it sounds like Buddy, to be honest.
Yeah,
sounds like
Buddy. That's one thing I want to mention. That makes sense, too, because when Buddy Guy signed on with Chess Records, they had no interest in making him a star. They wanted him to be a studio musician. They wanted him to play shit that he didn't want to play. And that did sound like Buddy Guy. I don't now that we talked about it, I almost bet it was him on guitar.
I
would
bet on that because that tone is very much Buddy Guy.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Okay, so there's somebody new for you, Mitty Collier.
Oh.
But
absolutely.
The person I started out with is the chess god, Willie Dixon. I mean, you and I, we could do a whole show on Willie Dixon music. He's just...
Well, Willie Dixon wrote so many of the early 50s songs. He also was, of course, really, he was the bass player.
Yeah.
For the label. And he was also talent coordinator because he brought a lot of people in.
That
Without Willie Dixon,
yep.
you really don't have the longevity of chess that, you know, transpired because he brought so many of the great people in.
Yeah, it seemed like everything that chess did went through Willie Dixon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either the writing or the production or even the backing, you know, of it. And mm-hmm. There's probably three people that Willie Dixon, Little Walter, who I don't think gets enough appreciation for all his contributions to chess. He was a loose cannon though. You know, he came and went a few times. But,
yeah.
Willie Dixon, he was the man. The absolute man in so many ways, so many behind the scenes. You know, it's funny because sometimes you talk about Willie Dixon and people are like, well, I don't know any of his music. Oh, yeah, you do. You know more of Willie Dixon's music than you think you do. So, you know, I mean, he wrote for everybody. Bo Diddley, John Lee Hooker, Howlin' Wolf, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
Everything that came out of chess, somehow Willie Dixon had his stamp on that song. So that's mine. And what do you got going for us, Carl? Two more for us.
Okay, well, we're going to be talking about a singer by the name of Eddie Floyd, best known for the song you're going to hear. Okay, he founded the Falcons, which was a great doo-wop group, and which featured Mack Rice, who also recorded for Stax. Also, Mack Rice wrote Mustang Sally. Okay, so they were forerunners to like the vocal groups of the Temptations, Four Hops. So that's the Falcons. Floyd then signed a contract as a songwriter in '65 with Stax, wrote a song called Comfort Me, recorded by Carla Thomas, then teamed with Steve Cropper to write songs for Wilson Pickett, which was signed to Atlantic Records. Atlantic Records, because of this, then made a deal with Stax to distribute their records. Okay? And Wexler brought Pickett from New York City to work with Booker T and the MGs. And, you know, I mean, so many things that he did sort of behind the curtain. And then he wrote this song, which was initially written for Otis Redding, but Jim Stewart, he was convinced by Harold Wexler to release Floyd's version. And this is Knock on Wood. And this became a number one R&B song. So let's start with Knock on Wood by Eddie Floyd.
Thank you.
That was Albert King, and I'm just going to give that over to you, TC, because I know he's your favorite guitarist. So
he's right up there. That was Albert Nelson. He changed his name to Albert King. And it's funny when he first started out.
Because he wanted to be connected to B.B. King. He wanted to be his brother.
He's telling people he's B.B. King's little brother. He named his guitar Lucy instead of Lucille. And when B.B. King heard about that, at first he was pissed. But then after he heard Albert King, he goes, you know what? He is my brother. Not by blood, but by the blues. And it's interesting because you got B.B. King, you got Albert King, and you got Freddie King, who is actually my favorite. And they were the kings of the blues. And there were no, you know, and like Rolling Stone magazine called Albert King the 13th. 13th mm-hmm. or 14th best guitarist of all time.
Yeah.
And he is just phenomenal. His nickname was the Velvet Bulldozer. The guy was like 6'4", 250. He actually drove a bulldozer as a day job one time. So that's where he got the nickname. But it's interesting. He played, when he died in 1992, he played a concert like 2 days before he died. And he died of a heart attack. But, I mean, he... So many people out there. Anybody that's listening to plays a guitar could say that Albert King's an influence. Just phenomenal. And Crosscuts is such a classic song. I mean, Eric Clapton mm-hmm. covered it. Everybody's covered it. But that was a good choice on that. Now, Eddie Floyd is, you know, we know him, but a lot of people don't really know him. And, he was one of those flying under the radar guys.
Well, he was a writer of songs, okay? He was a songwriter.
Yeah.
If you take a look at Stax, everybody that was a major Stax player recorded an Eddie Floyd written song.
Yeah.
No question.
And if
everybody.
You look him up, when you look him up, like if you Google him, it'll come up Eddie Floyd songwriter.
Right.
You know, that as a priority. And then when you look at it, he's a songwriter, singer, you know, and all that. But yeah, he was another one of those guys. He was like almost, I don't know if I can compare him, but Eddie Floyd was kind of like the Willie Dixon of Stax.
Yeah.
If you can agree to that.
I would agree with that. He was the second most prolific songwriter at Stax behind Isaac Hayes and David Porter.
Right.
But between those three, there's a good 70-80% of Stax, you know, singles that came out that were written by them.
And Floyd did some sessions work too, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. He did a ton of session work.
Yeah.
You know, an incredible guy. I want to get back a little bit to Albert King because I want to just mention that the recording you just heard was 1966. Okay, Albert King actually started recording in 1953 with Parrot Records. Then he basically then went into St. Louis and he got hooked up with Ike Turner and Chuck Berry. So
there you go,
names. Another connection.
Yep.
Okay, and he signed on to the Little Milton's Bobbin label in 1959, but then King Records out of Cincinnati. And we talked about King a couple weeks back, released the song Don't Throw Your Love on Me So Strong, which was his first real big hit, and that was in 61. Right. So then he signed with Stax, and he did at least four top 100 R&Bs with Stax. And two of them, including Crosscut Saw, were in the top 10. So there you go.
That's it. All right, man. Hey, we're getting to the end here. These will be my two last songs. And I saved my heaviest hitters for this. And I mentioned Howlin' Wolf earlier. And he's one of the big ones. And I'll tell you right now, my other, what the hell do I got? Never mind. Let's play Howlin' Wolf, and then we'll get to the second one. I got lost there for a second.
Oh, I love this fucking song.
The gypsy woman told my mother before I was born, I got a boy child coming. He's gonna be a son of a gun. He's gonna make pretty women jump and shout. And the world wanna know what this all about. I got a black cat bone. I got a mojo too. I got the John the Conqueror. I'm gonna mess with you. I'm gonna make you girls lead me by my hand. Then the world I know the hoochie coochie man. But you know I'm here. Well, you know the hoochie coochie man.
seventh day, on the seventh month, the seventh doctor say he was born for good luck, and that you see, I got $700. Don't you mess with me, but you know, yeah.
You like that one, did
you? Than that. You just don't get better
Muddy Waters.
Than that shit.
I mean, Muddy Waters was really the face of chess. I mean, what's interesting about that is when he first recorded that song in the early 50s, he actually wrote it. And he recorded it in his band. You know, and there's one person we haven't mentioned. We talked about Willie Dixon and everything, band on piano, and all that keyboards behind all that chess music, Otis Spann. Now on this song, particular song, Little Walter's on it, Willie Dixon's on it, Jimmy Rogers is playing guitar on it, you got Muddy Waters. I mean, my God, you want to talk about a super group back
oh,
in those
shit,
days.
Yeah.
You know, and that song is such a... you know, rhythm and blues, rock song, staple.
Classic.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest. But Muddy Waters, and he's one that they kept him on the chess label the whole time, which is interesting because, you know, like we talked about how they pushed him out to subsidiaries because of the payola and everything. But he was really the father of modern Chicago blues. You know, that whole Chicago blues scene, which when we talk about blues, you know, you talk about Mississippi Delta, you talk about Memphis, and you talk about Chicago, and right up the line there, and how they, you know, you can draw a line between the three of them and how they are all interchanged and how we've been talking about that all night. But before him, we had Howlin' Wolf. And I heard you say right at the beginning, I love this fucking song. Smokestack Lightning. You know, it's interesting. He recorded it in 1956 for chess, but he had been playing it since the early 1930s. He wrote it that far back. And Smokestack Lightning, he described it as... when they were kids, they used to watch the trains go by at night and the sparks flying out of the smokestacks of the trains. And that's where he got the idea for Smokestack Lightning. But, he'd been playing it for 25 years before he ever recorded it, which I think is pretty interesting. But Howlin' Wolf, Muddy Waters, like we said at the beginning of the show, there's so many people that, you know, we wish we could include. They actually worked for chess, but they didn't record for chess. They recorded for the subsidiaries. So there's people like John Lee Hooker, Bo Diddley, Etta James, Coco Taylor, that you didn't hear tonight because they're not on the chess label. They worked for chess. They're under contract by chess. So we're going to get back to that. I know we're going to do another show of that very soon because we're both chomping at the bit to get these other people in here. But so those are my eight songs. And you want to add anything else about Muddy Waters or Howlin' Wolf? I mean, we all know who those guys are.
How can I? Just listen to those songs. You know that both of them were the foundation of that label.
Yeah.
They were some of the earliest people signed to chess. They basically, you know, Phil Chess and the Chess Brothers knew exactly what they were doing when they got these people and just built the foundation.
And those two had loyalty, too, because, you know, a lot of these people came and went that we featured tonight. But Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf had loyalty. to the Chess label. Pretty much wrote them out the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
Beginning
Absolutely.
To end. Okay, man. Let's see. You got two more for us.
I got two more, and we're going to talk about Sam Moore and Dave Prater, otherwise known as Sam and Dave. And all I can tell you is that they were with Stax for 3 years, 65 to 68. So we're getting to the end of the 68 Stax. I'm going from 1960 to 68 for a reason, and we'll get to that when we hear the second song. But, you know, you talk about Hold On, I'm Coming, I Thank You, Wrap It Up, When Something is Wrong with My Baby. These guys, the only person that did better in terms of coverage in R&B in these 3 years was Aretha Franklin. Nobody
That's right.
had as many top 20 hits. Nobody had top 10 albums than Sam and Dave. They absolutely killed it. And 90% of their music, and I want to make this clear, was written by David Porter and Isaac Hayes. Okay, they all got together and they all worked together to come up with some of the greatest music you've ever heard. And the song we're going to sing is Soul Man. Of course, the Blues Brothers Band redid that. And of course, they redid it with Duck Dunn, with Steve Cropper. And even
yep.
Sam and Dave and were featured in Blues Brothers 2000. So, you know, the influence, you know, you go to people like Bruce Springsteen, and so many people have put them as a influence. So we're going to do like the song from Sam and Dave. Well, one of two, because Hold On, I'm Coming is damn good, too.
Yeah.
We're going to do Soul Man first. So it was Soul Man, and then when the second song plays, then I'll follow that up after it plays. So this is Soul Man by Sam and Dave.
Call time. to guide my walking shoes
all the way to Washington.
I can't take a plane, bus or train, cause my money ain't that long.
So that was the Staple Singers. The Staple Singers were basically connected in Chicago, and they actually first recorded for VJ Records, which was Chess's the other label in Chicago that was in competition with Chess. They also recorded for Checker, too. So, you know, they had started in basically 1953. By 1967, they were signed to Stax. Now, I had mentioned earlier that Stax was the first integrated label. And we have to remember we're in Memphis in 1968, okay, where you had Martin Luther King was assassinated and there was much upheaval. And so Staple Singers were primarily a gospel group, and they became very, very political. And Stax at this time in 67, 68 became more and more political with what was going on and so on and so forth. And with their integrated group, it was one of the few places where whites and blacks, along with the hotel that was nearby, where they could actually – you know, talk and work together and such. So you've got this song, Long Walk to D.C., which was about a freedom march to D.C. to lobby for equal rights for blacks. And so that's what this song is about. Basically, their first Stax hit was Heavy Makes You Happy. And then, of course, Respect Yourself and various other ones. But they were connected with Stax until Stax basically went under or was taken over by Fantasy Records in 74, I think. So what do you think of that, TC?
You know, it's interesting because Mavis Staple is still out there. She's still touring. She's still doing the whole thing. And that whole family was incredible. And you know, when you're talking about that and you're talking about the racial strife and how bad Memphis was at the time, do you think that the integration of Stax Record might have hurt them? somewhat.
No, I know it's the exact opposite.
Okay.
Now, certainly there were business things and things that were out of their control. But when you talk about Memphis itself and the influence that Stax had, it had a major positive influence in keeping the violence to a minimum.
Yeah.
That's so a wonderful thing.
Yeah, they were good at bringing the people together. And did you make it down to Beale Street at all?
I did not. Okay. I did see Beale Street.
Okay.
I did not want. But I definitely saw Beale Street.
Get yourself a drink, Carl.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing.
Okay, I'm gonna step back to Sam and Dave for a second. There's a scene in the Blues Brothers early in the movie when they were on their way to the Holiday Inn to sign up Murph and the Murph Tones, which had Steve Cropper and Duck Dunn in it. There's an eight track tape in the player in the car. Do you know what the label said?
Stax.
No. Well, it said Best of Sam and Dave.
Okay.
That's what they're playing on their way to see Murph and the Murph Tones. It's just a little trivia thing that I thought about when you're playing that. But Soul Man was, I mean, you know, I knew the song, but so many people didn't know that. When the Blues Brothers came out with it, it's like, wow, let's check it out, you know. But Sam and Dave, man. And you talked.
Well, you know, it was hard for me to choose between that and Hold On, I'm Coming. I mean,
yeah,
Jesus, God.
Yeah, that's a great, great song. But I think as far as listeners, maybe people that aren't familiar with what we're playing tonight, Soul Man was the better choice because they can associate with that. And that's just so cool. Like, I learned a lot from watching John Candy movies, you know, because they, in the soundtrack, they pull the most obscure songs and throw them in there. And I'm like, what the fuck is that song? And I look it up, you know, and it's because of John Candy. I became a Laverne Baker fan, you know? So, I mean, you hear a song in a movie and if it intrigues you whatsoever, look it up. Because you're going to find 20 more songs by doing that. And I'm sure people are watching the Blues Brothers and Best of Sam and Dave. It's like, well, who's Sam and Dave? I've heard of them. Maybe they went back and looked and saw, my God, look at these guys' library. Look what they got under the resume. So,
absolutely.
Well, what did we learn tonight, Carl? I'll tell you what I learned. We started this out as a friendly competition. And I'm going to say the final score is Stax 8, Chess 8.
Actually, I think it's 8-7, but nah.
Okay, where was my clunker? Which one do you think you beat me
on? Clunkers.
There were no clunkers.
There were
eight,
no clunkers.
Seven. It was 8-7 anyway. It was me winning.
Exactly.
It's funny how we started that out like, yeah, I'll take Stax. Yeah, I'll take Chess.
Yeah.
I'm going to kick your ass. And we're both like,
Well, listen, I got a dream. I'm a Steelers fan. Fuck you.
Yeah,
there you go. Everything's fucked right now.
Hey, you know, there's one thing the good you can say about the Steelers over the Bills. Steelers didn't lose today.
That's true.
They had a
bye. Of course, they didn't play either.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I think one thing we did learn was, you know, we didn't have enough time to play as much as we wanted to. Because,
you know, and
there's
and also
just so
really,
much good stuff.
You know, the thing is that our listeners learn, you know, we both love both labels. Okay. We know this stuff.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do is to share it with the people that listen to us. And I'm hoping that we did a good job in giving a little bit of presentation. And I would recommend anyone who's down in Memphis to go to the Stax Museum. Because I just touched on just tiny little bits. They have so much information there. It's amazing.
You could have spent hours in there, I'm sure.
I spent 2.5 hours, so yeah.
Wow.
I did.
Yeah, and I always, you know, I kind of worry that people listen and go, wow, what was that third song Carl played? But I want to emphasize that I do have a Rock This Town Radio at TC Facebook page. And after every show, I immediately put up the set list. So you can go back and review the set list and remember the song we played. And maybe you want to look up more about Mitty Collier or Eddie Floyd or anybody else we played, the Moonglows or the Marquees. Well, that's where you go. You'll see the bands, you'll see the titles, and please, you know, open your imagination and be curious and go find this good music that Carl and I have found. We're doing the research for you people. We do. I mean, you know, it's not like Carl and I just say, hey, let's have a show tonight. You know, there's a lot involved.
And how many songs did you go over to cut it down to 8?
40.
Yeah, I did about 40 or 50.
Yeah,
40. That's what we do, people.
And a lot of those were, you know, all right, here's a chess artist I'd like to feature. Ah, son of a bitch, they recorded on Checker. Or son of a bitch, they recorded on Volt, in your case. But yeah, that's what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, and not only that, but once you get the songs, then you go and find out the information about it. So I would say 10 hours. 15 hours, whatever we put in
shows
a week, 20 hours. So,
yeah.
You know, and it's, like I always said, I don't give a shit if anybody's listening or not. I'm doing this for me. I'm doing this for you too, Carl. I mean, we're having so much fun doing this. I told Carl I had a really bad week and I just couldn't wait to get on the air, you know, to forget about everything and just have a great time tonight, listen to some great music, hopefully turn some people on to this great music. So that's what we did tonight. We won't have time for birthday songs tonight, but I do want to run through the birthday list real quick, Carl.
Go for it.
Happy heavenly birthday to Glenn Pry today. Did you know that, Carl? He was he was born in 1948. Okay, tomorrow Johnny Rivers will be 80. And Joni Mitchell will be 79. Tuesday would have been Patty Page's birthday, born in 1927, died in 2013. Tuesday, Bonnie Bramlett will be 78, Delaney and Bonnie. Tuesday would have been Minnie Riperton's birthday. She was born in 1947. She died at 32 years old.
I know.
Tragedy. Yep. And also Tuesday, Bonnie Raitt will be 73. I was going to play a Bonnie Raitt song, by the way. Also Tuesday, Ricky Lee Jones will be 68. She's one of those ones you never think she would have aged. I think she's still 35, you know?
Yeah, Tucky's exactly.
She's in love. Maybe if she would have had more music, we would think different. Okay, anyways, Wednesday, Tom Fogerty, John Fogerty's brother they both... He was born in 1941. He died in 1990. Thursday, Greg Lake, who I think had one of the finest voices ever in rock and roll, Emerson, Lake and Palmer. He was born in 1948. He died in 2016. Friday, I just mentioned her a little bit ago, Laverne Baker, 11/11/29, died in 1997. One-hit wonder, the Randy... had on a couple weeks ago. On Saturday, Brian Hyland. You know what he did, Carl?
Itsy bitsy polka dot bikini.
You left out teeny weeny.
Mine's not teeny weeny. It's invisible.
Okay. All right. He was born in 1943. He'll be 79 on Saturday. And somebody Carl featured will be 78 on Saturday also. Booker T. Jones. How about that? And Saturday also, Neil Young will be 77. And one of the songs I was going to play for birthday was Harvest Moon. I just love that fucking song. But we really don't have time for birthday songs tonight. But it will be on the birthday list online. Carl, next weekend, I will be doing the show, but that weekend I'm going down to Washington, D.C. again.
Ooh.
Going down to the Stephen F. Udvar Hazy Center, which is out of Dulles Airport. It's the annex for Air and Space Museum. And they got all the planes out there. They got a space shuttle, an SR-71. They got the Enola Gay. So it's like my annual visit there. Sunday morning, I'm going to the Washington National Zoo, Smithsonian Zoo. Now I'll drive back in the afternoon and I'm doing my show. And since I'm doing this road trip next week, Carl, I am going to feature songs from artists from Washington, D.C., from Virginia, and from Maryland. What do you think of that shit? Yeah, my road trip. So that's what it will be on next week.
If you go through Frederick, say hello for me. That's where I live for a number of years.
Actually, I do, because it's right out. No, I'm going a different way. If I was going to Columbia, I would go through there. I just went through Frederick, 2 weeks ago when I had to go down to Baltimore for work. So right on I-70 there. No, I'm going to come up the different way. I'm going to come up through 522 and at the Virginia Farm Market. I'm jonesing for that. But it's going to be a good little trip, a nice little weekend getaway. And as we talked earlier, I really fucking need it. So,
exactly.
Okay. Anything else you want to add, my friend? Oh, yeah. Give me your housekeeping.
Let me get there for a second. Hold on. Because we are booked this week. I'm telling you. You know, I was on vacation and I sort of let it slip. Not any longer. Okay. So this is what we got so far. So on, let's just go back here a second. Here we go. All right. So Tuesday, we're doing a special show. And if you are available, we would like you to call NTC because we are doing sort of, we're all getting together and we're all going to bitch a little bit. And the title of the show is Christmas in November, Love It or Hate It, It's Here to Stay. And so we're all going to get together. And if you all want to, like, complain and bitch and moan about hearing my Mariah Carey for the 100th time by November 2nd, let me know. Just to give you an idea, TC, there are 3 radio stations in the metro New York area that are not connected that are all playing, as of this moment, Christmas music 24/7.
You told me that. You're fucking killing me, dude.
I'm just letting you know.
You're killing me.
So we're doing that on Tuesday. On Wednesday, we have a new show, and it's Voices from the Bog, and this is going to be Doc Sledge, otherwise known as Eric Owen, and it's going to be a bi-weekly show, at least to begin with news and bitches and rants and raves and reviews. And who knows, within a couple of weeks, we may have the resurrection of the swing. And I'll explain that later.
Now, Doc used to do a regular show, right?
Yes. Yes. So he's going to be back doing a regular show. We've been working on this under
back,
the radar.
Doc. Good.
Okay, so Thursday we have, we go back to our Doctor Who special with Rachel and Vicky and myself, and this is going to be Monsters and Aliens from Doctor Who Part 2. So we're going to do that on Thursday afternoon. Then on Friday, on the 11th, we've got Cathode Ray Mission, and Adam Parenz is going to be doing a deep dive into the Danish crime series for Bredelsen, otherwise known as The Killing. And then on Saturday, movies that we're thankful for, and sort of also like the ending of our Day of the Dead and Halloween, Rachel and I are going to be doing a commentary watch of Coco, which is the Disney film. So we're going to be doing that. And that's what we have this week. And then, of course, you said what you're doing a week from tonight with the songs from D.C., artists from D.C., Virginia, and Maryland.
Correct. Boy, you're going to be a busy boy, aren't you?
I like being a busy boy.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure glad that you had time to do this with me tonight. I love when you're co-host. I mean, I like doing the show by myself, of course, but throw you in every once in a while as a co-host. It's great to get a different perspective on things. And
we've been doing this a long time. You and I go back doing radio. We don't even want to admit how long ago.
I know. That's it for sure. That was a long time ago.
College. Yes, it was college. Let's just leave it at that.
Exactly. But, it's always interesting because we challenge each other, and that's what I like about it. We're not playing shit you hear every day, but we're playing good shit you should hear every day. So
I sure
appreciate you joining me again. Maybe in a couple of weeks we can do something else. We talked about, checker and bolt, and the other one I came up with.
Yes.
You liked that idea, didn't you?
The three Louis.
Louis, and a couple covers thrown in, and we'll tell you about that later. But anyways, everything Carl mentioned, you can find all those podcasts right here on Deviant Legion Network on Blog Talk Radio. Listen live or find any of our shows in the episodes archives whenever it works for you. Carl, thank you very much for being here with me tonight.
Oh, I had a blast. I love doing this. You don't have to even twist my arm anymore.
Yeah, I thought about you today. It's like you do these movies, you do these commentaries, but it seems like I give you another element that, is right in your wheelhouse and maybe offer you an opportunity to share that you normally wouldn't have to share.
Yeah.
Is that summed
very
up?
Much so. I really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, well, this show wouldn't have happened ever without you, so... Yeah, I guess I'm stuck with you, fucker.
So You've been stuck with me for years, and that's kind of scary.
When that friend request came up on Facebook, I probably could have just fucked that guy. But no, you're my man. You're my man. You always have been. Carl, thanks a lot again for tonight. And,
all right, man. Listen, take care, right. Everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for having me. PC.
All right,
appreciate
brother.
It, man.
Okay, man. Okay, and I always tell you about this every week. I have a YouTube channel. It's TCC77, and I shoot. I go to concerts all the time, and I shoot videos live, and I'm up front, and I try to get the best videos I can, and they're all on there. There's like 260 of them on my YouTube channel now, so check it out, TCC77 on YouTube. And I want, on behalf of Cuddles the Cat, I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. This is one of the most fun shows that we've done with Carl, and can't wait till we go back and do another one with him. So that's about it from my end. As us cool cats say, we'll catch you on the flip side.